Maaseres, Perek Dalet, Mishnah Aleph, 4:1. We've seen a number of times already that while the normal time midoraisa, at which one can no longer eat produce even casually without tithing it, is once it's had gemar malacha, the finishing of the processing out in the fields, and bringing it home through the front door into the house, assuming that you are using it for home consumption as opposed to selling it. We've seen, though, however, that at least midrabanan, if one does certain things after gemar malacha, but before bringing it home, that will establish the requirement to tithe, even though it hasn't come home yet. And those we've seen, for example, taking truma gadola could affect that, as well as bringing it to the chatzer, and so on. Yeah, the Mishnah now will discuss other scenarios where that is true. In fact, the Bar Tanura here lists that full list. I might as well read to you right now for a moment. The full list of events, according to the Bar Tanura, that could require tithing after gemar malacha, but prior to bringing it home, is ha'ur, cooking it in over fire, v'hamelach, salting it, meaning pouring salt over it to preserve it, v'hamekach, selling it, as we've seen before, v'hatruma, taking truma gadola, v'hashabbos, passing through Shabbos, we'll explain that a little bit in this perek, v'hachatzer, and bringing into the chatzer, the courtyard that's Mishta Meres, that provides certain protections, as we saw in the Mishnah previously in the previous perek, either providing privacy or security. All those are the ones, says the Bar Tanura, that could require tithing, even though it never came home, and that requirement to be midrabanan. So here our Mishnah says, hakovesh, if one pickles vegetables, let's say. So that means he's putting it into vinegar or salt water, etc. Or v'hasholek, one who cooks vegetables. V'homoleach, that's salting it. Again, that means like pouring a little salt on it to desiccate it, to dry it out and preserve it. All those are considered to be acts which make at least midrabanan, this be a formal consumption once you've pickled it or salted it, etc. And at that point, chayev, one must tithe fully before eating. There's no more achilas arai for those pickled, salted, etc., cooked vegetables. Hamechamen ba'adama, if one buries vegetables in the ground, and the idea is here that that's going to make them ripen a little further. So, Pater, that remains pater, meaning that even though it's no longer just totally casual, you've done some prep to it, so then that doesn't matter. It's still not considered to be one on the list, which is a formal consumption, and if one takes it out of the ground, he could eat it then still awry. Hametabel besadeh, if one dips his food, let's say he's got some whatever it is, you know, some cucumbers or whatever it is, olives in the field, and he's eating them and he's dipping it into, say, salt or vinegar and so on, still putter, dipping into salt is not the same as salting it, meaning drowning in salt to pickle it, to dry it out and preserve it, and that being the case, just dipping in salt and eating it doesn't kick in the requirement to tithe. You could have it achilas arai out in the fields. Haputzea zeisim, if a person bangs olives, the idea is that olives, when eaten raw off the tree, are really terribly bitter. But part of the bitterness comes from some juices inside that can be released if you bang it around gently and let those juices come out. So the Mishnah says here, if you bang around potzea, you bang around those olives, sheyetze mehem hasaraf, so that the saraf, like the burny liquid, comes out of it. That's not considered to be prepping the food in such a way that it becomes a formal eating, and therefore pater, it remains exempt, those olives are exempt from tithing. Hasochet zeisim al basaro, also pater. If a person squeezes olives so that the olive oil falls directly onto his skin to act as like some sort of like salve on his skin. So although we've said that sicha, anointing on your skin of olive oil, is kashtia, is like drinking it, nevertheless, applying it directly to your skin is considered to be, again, like sort of like an arai, a casual consumption of the olive oil, and therefore it's exempt from tithing. However, we saw previously, a couple of parakim ago really, that the gemar malacha, the finishing of the processing of olive oil, is when it collects into the reservoir in front of the olive press. So if you make a makeshift reservoir of squeezing olive oil and collecting into like your hand even, so that little mini harvest, if you will, of olive oil in your hand is a batch all to itself, which then requires tithing, and that's what it says here. Hasochet zeisim al basaro pater. If you squeeze it directly onto your skin, then you're exempt. But im sachat venas l'socha yado, if you squeeze it and collect it as a little puddle of olive oil in your hands, then a chayev. That little puddle of olive oil requires tithing before you can either anoint it or drink it, whatever the case may be. As for wine and grape juice, so we saw that the Gemar Malacha is after you press the grapes and they drip down into this gas tachton, I'll call it a cistern, where that grape juice collects. So we said you wait, and then after a while it starts to ferment after some days and bubbles up, and the different sediment that was like the leaves perhaps, but I was going to the skin of the grapes will bubble up to the surface, and then you mikape, you skim off the top of those floating on the top of the cistern, and that will be the Gemar Malacha. So here, if you take unskimmed wine, I'll call it, and you put it onto some sort of dish of food, meaning a dish, when I say dish, I mean like some stew or something, which you're adding wine to. So ha-mikapele tavshil. If you take the dish, like the stew, you pour some wine on top of it, and then you skim off what's floating on top, doesn't matter, still pater, that's not considered to be the Gemar Malacha, which formalizes the tithing requirement of the wine, because it's on a dish of food, not in a cistern, really analogous to applying the olive oil to your skin. Again, here the tavshil is not on the fire, because if we were cooking the grape juice or wine, so then certainly at that point it's cooking, and cooking does require tithing. But we're talking about a cold dish of food here. On the other hand, just as we said about olive oil, if you collect it into a little puddle in your hand, that's like a makeshift reservoir, which requires tithing. So too, if you pour that unskimmed grape juice into a kadera, into a pot, so the pot becomes like a makeshift little cistern, and that being the case, chayev, at that point, you have to tithe before drinking. Bipnei shehu kabor katan, we say that the pot in which you pour this unskimmed until now grape juice is the same thing as a bore, a little cistern collecting of a mini bore of a collection of grape juice. So once you skim it, now you kick in the requirements that require tithing before consumption of that wine, even achilas arai, even casually. Maisras Perik Dalid Mishnah Base 4.2. Now we talk about the power of Shabbos to establish the requirement to tithe. The Mishnah says tinokos. Now a tinok in modern Hebrew is a baby, but in Mishnaic Hebrew, tinok just means a child less than bar mitzvah. So we're talking like an 8-year-old boy or a 10-year-old boy, something like that. Tinokos shetamnu te'enim l'shabbos. If the boy set aside some figs as a stash for Shabbos, you know, something equivalent to, let's say, whatever, they put it away intending to save it for Shabbos. Now, the idea here is that they're going to have it on Shabbos, but nothing really stops them from sneaking and eating them beforehand. But if they were set aside for Shabbos, and then shechachu lahasran, they didn't to tie them before Shabbos, then lo yochlu l'moti Shabbos ad she'asru, then those figs can't be eaten even after Shabbos until they're tithed. So just to clarify, what we're saying here is before Shabbos, since Shabbos didn't pass over those figs, there's no obligation to tithe them. And if one wants to get them early, you can have them achilas arai, not a problem. But since they were designated for Shabbos, once Shabbos arrives, they're for Shabbos. And even though you can't eat them on Shabbos, because if you don't tie the foods before Shabbos, it's forbidden to tie them on Shabbos, midrabanan, because it's like tikkun mana, like fixing a utensil or something, midrabanan, it's one might confuse the two. So that being the case, one can't eat those figs on Shabbos itself, but since they were set aside for Shabbos, kamotzi Shabbos, the figs must be tithed and before eating them, even achilas arai. And the additional chiddush here of the Mishnah is, even we're talking about tinoko, so these are children, they're not adults, they're not bar mitzvah. Nevertheless, their intentions are significant to establish the requirements to tithe. Kalkala Shabbos. Now, this is a step up. This isn't just setting aside figs like on the ground somewhere as a secret stash. This is putting them in the Shabbos treat drawer, so to speak, of the 21st century. Here it's, you set aside these figs to sit inside the Kalkala Shabbos, the Shabbos basket. So the idea here is that under normal circumstances, in contrast to the previous part of the Mishnah, here one normally does not put his hand in that cookie jar and take the food set aside for Shabbos before Shabbos. It's like sort of a formal designation. This stuff will be for Shabbos. So the question is, once you've set it aside for Shabbos in a way that you're unlikely to backtrack on it, now can you eat it achilas arai if you change your mind before Shabbos without tithing it. There, Beis Shammai Pocher, Beis Shammai says, yes, you could. They exempt the requirement for tithing for achilas arai. And Beis Hillel say, no, you can't. They're mechayvin. Beis Hillel say, no. Once you set it aside for Shabbos in a formal way, putting it inside the official Shabbos kalkala, the Shabbos basket, you know, the Shabbos treat drawer, there's no going back. And if you want to eat it even before Shabbos, you must tithe it. And that's halacha. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda is going to even say further. He says, "Afa loket esach kalkala lishloach lechavero." If a person takes the figs, collects them, and puts them in the basket, that is not a Shabbos basket, according to Bar Tanura. It's just a gift basket. So since under normal circumstances, people do not go raiding the gift basket that they get, that's going to be a gift. So now it's designated for gift sending. And of course, what we've said in the past, that giving something as a gift does not necessitate the taking of tithes. Certainly, if you send someone a gift to their home, when it gets to their home, since it will be theirs, it must be tithed according to God to their house. So the point here is you're setting aside food. It's kind of like a formal setting aside of the food. It's out of your hands and sort of designated for him. It's sort of on his way. It's almost, you know, it's not so different perhaps than a formal sale, if you will. It's a formal setting aside, not just a casual gifting. And that being the case, at least according to Rabbi Yehuda, lo yochal adji aser, you can't take food out of that gift basket before you tithe it, since it's sort of become established in a formal way. However, the halacha does not follow Rabbi Yehuda. That is to say, if you set aside food for gifting, that does not necessitate the taking of tithes. But if you set aside food formally for Shabbos, in like the Shabbos basket or something labeled, you know, this is for Shabbos especially, then at that point, you certainly must tithe before eating it. And if you set it aside for Shabbos even in a more casual way, like even for your children, then when Shabbos passes over it, you must tithe afterwards before eating. So you see that's where Shabbos is necessitating the taking of tithes. Perek Dalet, Mishnah Gimel of Maestros, 4-3. The next few Mishnayos will consider if you take a little mini batch, if you will, of produce from a batch that has not had Gemar Malacha, and then you do something to that mini batch, can that mini batch get the status of being Nigmar Malacha as like a little a subset of the whole, requiring that mini batch to be tithed before eating even a Achilas Arai? So the Mishnah says, Hanotel Zeisim min HaMa'atan. If a person takes out a few olives from the ma'atan, now the ma'atan was the container where you put olives that you picked to sort of like stew in their own juices, sort of like maybe it's ferment or get old a little bit and soften, and that makes the extraction of the oil later on much easier. So they're sitting in this ma'atan, and that's really not digmar malachtan because you're planning on pressing them for oil. And the question is, what happens if you pick a few of those out? Betovel echad echad b'melach v'ochel. You could take them one at a time, dip them into salt, and eat them. And that can be considered achilas arai. The dipping in salt here is dipping in salt one at a time. It's not drowning in salt to sort of dry it out, to make, you know, like beef jerky style olives. So that's okay. That's achilas arai. Imalach v'nas in the fun of. However, if you dip them in salt and then like put them in front of you for later consumption, so you start dipping them multiple olives one at a time, then another, and then another, and you're putting it in front of you. So what you're doing is you're creating a little mini batch, and that mini batch is sort of setting aside for future consumption, not immediate consumption, and that mini batch essentially has reached its gemar malacha, because what are you doing? Basically, you're taking them, you're dipping them in salt, and then you're going to eat them. So they're no longer set aside for oil pressing and so on. You've created a mini batch, and that being the case, kind of like the halachas of tzeirah of before, of you know, amassing a number of these things. So if you have more than one dipped in salt sitting before you at that point, you must tie them before eating them. And that's what the Mishnah says here, in Malach v'nas in the fun of, if you salt them multiple olives, putting them in front of you for not immediate hand-to-mouth consumption, so then chayev, so then they're required to be tithed. Rabbi Lezer even adds further. He says, if min ha-ma'atan ha-tahor, if you are tame and you're pulling olives out of a ma'atan, and the ma'atan is holding a number of olives that are all tahor, so you're never going to put the olives that you were picking at and eating, if you decide afterwards to, you know, to put them, you've had enough, you're going to put them back into the batch within the ma'atan. You'll never do that if you are tame and the olives are tahor, because you're going to make the larger ma'atan contents to be tame. So you wouldn't do that. So that being the case, you're not intending to ever put it back, and that being the case, the olives you take out are like a mini batch with no turning back, and therefore they're immediately chayiv in tithing, says Rabbi Eliezer. So that's what he says here. He says, min ha-ma'atan ha-tahor. If you're pulling out of a tahor ma'atan and you're a tameh, then chayiv, then that batch you pulled out of the matan all must be taught right away because you're not ever going to even consider putting them back in. Umin ha-tame pator. But if you're already pulling out of a tame content matan, so then you are, that little mini batch is exempt because, as the Mishnah says, b'mnei shehu machazir es ha-mosar, because you'll happily return the olives back to the matan in the event that you don't eat all of them that you took out, the handful you took out, whatever it was. So that's Rabbi Elazar Shita. However, the halacha does not follow him. The halacha follows Stam Mishnah, the Tanakama, which means that we're not considering that factor. We're simply saying if you take a handful out, as long as you don't start amassing, several salted ones, that's considered a chila sarai, and you can eat them without tithing them. Meiser is Perek Dalet, Mishnah Dalet, 4-4. More of little mini batches, if you will. Here we're talking about drinking wine. Now, wine in the time of the Mishnah, you have to understand two things about them, their consumption. The first is that one normally doesn't just drink wine awry, casually. Wine is the kind of drink that you sort of drink in a formal way always. It doesn't lend itself so simply to just a casual chug, kind of like today. One doesn't just grab a bottle of wine and start drinking it. Usually it's something more formal. So that's the first thing. So anytime you start drinking wine, it might already smack of being formal by the fact that it's wine you're drinking. Second of all, in the time of the Mishnah, they strongly preferred to drink their wine diluted with water. In fact, there's a sheet in Maseches Brachos Perek Ches that if you don't put water inside wine, it doesn't even get the bracha of Brei Priya Gafen, and it has to be, and Brei Priya 8 didn't reach the improved status of wine. So that was their preference. And that being the case, they'd be adding water to the wine. And of course, adding water to the wine is sort of like a more formal prep, which sort of, again, smacks kind of non-awry consumption, non-casual consumption, because you're sort of preparing it for consumption. It's no longer casual. It's become formalized by adding the water. Now, the water that they added to the wine, believe it or not, sometimes was cold, kind of like a wine breezer, and sometimes they liked it warm, kind of like a sangria, like a wine tea. Something like that. So the Mishnah will consider both those options. So the Mishnah starts out by saying, Shosim al Hagas, one could drink wine at the cistern where the wine is sitting in the ground. But when it says al Hagas, literally on the cistern, it means quite literally that. It means that you're leaning right over the pit where the wine is sitting. Rosh Varubo, your head and most of your body is right over the pit. The idea being that if you're drinking really at the pit, it's casual. But once you start removing your person away from the pit and eating anywhere else besides at the very pit where the wine is sitting, it's drinking wine, and that's becoming already a formalized, more formal consumption requiring tithing. And certainly if you're adding water to make it drinkable, and that is what Rabbi Meir says. So he says, Shosan Lagas, you can drink directly over the pit. Bein alachamun or bein alatzonin, doesn't matter if you've used hot or cold water to dilute the wine, and it's still pater, it's exempt from tithing because you're eating it, drinking it awry, because you've positioned your body right over the pit, so you're drinking it right there. That's Rabbi Meir Shita. Rabbi Lezer Rav Tzadok Mechayev, he says, even then you'll have to tithe the wine before drinking it. There's no such thing as drinking even directly on top of the pit. According to the Bartanura, the reason why is because a person is liable to retract away from being over the pit. And at that point, he's drinking away from the pit and drinking wine away from the pit. Certainly, wine that's been cut with water is a formal consumption, and there's no going back. According to Rashi, in contrast to the Bartanura, the issue here, Rabbi Elazar Tzadok's issue, is that once you've added water to the wine, that is like a formal, makes it a formal consumption. It doesn't matter, nothing else to talk about. So according to Bartanura, he held that it's just a durabun unless you retract your body away from the pit. According to Rashi, it's simply by adding water, this is Rashi and Erevin, adding water to the wine in and of itself makes it a formalized consumption that requires tithing. The Chachamim, who the Lacha follows, however, says, Alachamin Chayev, if what you use to dilute the wine was warm water, so then even over the pit you'll be chayev. And the reason why is because, not so different than the rationale of Rabbi Eliezer of the previous Mishnah, you wouldn't pour the leftover wine back into the pit under any circumstances, because it would spoil the wine. If it's warm, it's going to spoil the wine in the pit. and therefore there's no turning back. You have a mini batch, and the mini batch has been cut with water, and you never would put it back because it's hot water. And that being the case, that mini batch now has to be tithed. It's like a separate batch before you had marmalacha, if you will, of the mini batch. You have to tithe that before consumption. However, al hatzonen, if you used cold water to dilute the wine and you're drinking it directly over the pit, so then since you're over the pit, and since if there is in theory any leftover wine, you'd be happy to pour it back into the cistern in the ground. That being the case, you haven't got a bona fide, distinct, separate batch, and it still can be a chilas arai because you're over the pit. And that being the case, you could drink it a chilas arai, and it's exempt from tithing. And the halacha follows the chachamim. Maisris Perek Dalid Mishnah Hey 4-5. More about eating different kinds of produce, taken away before Gmar Malacha, and potentially creating a mini batch, and creating mini Gmar Malacha requiring tithing. So the Mishnah starts out by talking about Saorim, which is barley. So we're specifically talking about barley at a distance away from the threshing floor. At the threshing floor, eating raw barley is a non-starter. Of course, it's a Chilas Arai. But what if you take some barley away from the threshing floor and you sort of are going to consume it off-site? So at what point might that constitute a formal eating? So the Mishnah says, Hamikalef Saorim, if you start peeling, like taking off the klipa, the husk, off the barley, and then eating it. Mekalef achas, achas v'ochel, if you do one at a time. Either the pshat is one kernel at a time, or Tiferes Yisrael understands it being one whole ear of barley corns at a time, and you eat them. So that's going to be considered to be a chilas arai. You're not gathering up some mini batch or something like that. Imkilef v'nasna sochiado, but if you start peeling the barley kernels and then amassing a pile of them in your hand, that pile in your hand is sort of like a mini batch that's had its gmar malacha, and that being the case, that mini batch will be chayev in tithing. The next case talks about wheat. The way the bartender learns it, the pshat here is hamolel malilos shel chitim. The word molel is like to like kind of roll together in your hand. So if you've ever taken like ripe wheat and kind of rolled it together, you'll know what I mean. If you haven't, it's hard to explain. You're basically, the chaff is, it's hard, so the chaff is loosened as you kind of grind it around your hand gently. All the bits of chaff are loosened, and you basically have the little wheat berries, let's call them. They're dry and uncooked, but they're wheat berries that kind of get separated but mixed in with the husks. It kind of, you can think of it maybe, if you've never seen it, as imagine how, you know, like peanuts, maybe. Peanuts have that soft husk around, that kind of reddish husk, you know, reddish peel, and you can oftentimes have like the peanuts mixed in with them. So if you have that situation where you took an ear of wheat, according to the bartender, it's toasted wheat. Malilos is toasted. So you take toasted wheat and then you like roll it up together in your hand, so you now have a mixture of the edible kernels along with bits of chaff. So that being the case, the Mishnah says hamolel, one who grinds in his hands gently malilos, ears of toasted wheat, shelchitim of wheat, menapa miyad liyad, you can sift it from hand to hand, meaning if you kind of throw the kernels from one hand to the other, what will happen is it's kind of like a winnowing process. Menapa is to sift, but here it's kind of like you're winnowing because you're going to let the chaff kind of blow away and the little, you know, the husks fall away into the ground, and the heavier kernels will be separated as they throw them back and forth in your hands. V'ochel, you could eat that, and that's considered to be achilas arai. But if you nipa v'nasna socheko, if you separate the kernels from the chaff, and you put a pile of those in your chek, like in your lap, like in the folds of your clothing, then you have a little mini pile, and this wheat you're planning on eating as is, as a collective mini pile. So again, you have a mini harvest, and that would then be chayev in the tithes prior to consumption. Now, there's a problem with the bartender's pshat, which is, he's learning from the Rambam, that if you toast the wheat, it's hard to understand why that wouldn't automatically be considered to be ur fire that establishes the requirements to tithe. And that being the case, it's hard to understand why any toasted wheat already wouldn't be chayev in all events for tithing. Therefore, a different pshat, a maybe more simple pshat, is that molel malilos is basically the same thing as being mekalef. You peel the saorim, you peel the husks off the barley, and your molel, you grind, like you mush together in your hands, the bits of wheat that go round and round, and that being the case, it's a chilas arai without cooking, and that's why you could eat it to eat them, you know, one at a time without, or you know, without making a separate pile in your lap. Next, we have kusbar. So kusbar is the plant which produces two separate things. It produces the seeds called coriander seeds, and that's the primary normal usage and normal reason why people plant the kusbar plant in the time of the Mishnah. But the leaves are called cilantro, the cilantro we eat. So in the time of Chazal, they weren't that into eating the green leafy stuff. So that being the case, under normal circumstances, if one plants a kusbar plant, he's intending to get the coriander seeds, and he could care less about the leaves. And that being the case, the leaves are not a pre, and that being the case, the leaves will be exempt from tithing requirements. However, if it's kusbar, it's the coriander / cilantro plant, shazara lazera, that you planted it for the sake of the coriander seeds, then yarka, the green part, meaning the cilantro, is pater, is exempt from tithing altogether. But zar liyark, if you planted it intending dafka that you're going to eat this as cilantro, so then misastra zera viyark, then one must tithe it before he eats even the cilantro, and it goes without saying, but the Mishnah said it, also the seeds, the coriander seeds, because that's the primary produce of the coriander plant. So the point here is that there's no way of getting around the requirement to tithe the seeds, the coriander seeds, because that's normal, but the requirement to tithe the cilantro leaves only is there in the event that you planted it dafka for cilantro. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Hasheves, the dill plant, it's kind of similar. It's misasras zera viyark vizirin. All the different edible parts of the dill plant are required tithing. That's Rabbi Eliezer's shita, meaning the zera, that's the dill seeds, like you see in the pickle jar. Yarek is the dill weed that's used, you know, also in pickles and soup and so on. And zirin, some kind of like shoots that, you know, or stems on which the stuff grows. So he says those are all normal things that you eat and plant dill for. And that being the case, when you plant the dill plant, automatically all these parts need to be tithed for consumption. The Chum disagree. The Chum omrim einu misaser zera v'yarek ela hashichalim. So shichalalim, and the vahagargir. The chachamim hold no. Normally, when you plant plants, you're going for the seeds, and you can care less about the green leafy stuff. That was the case in the Mishnah, anyways. And they hold that all plants that have edible seeds, you want the seeds, and the green stuff doesn't need to be tithed unless you specifically intended to consume the green stuff, like our previous case regarding cilantro. The two exceptions, and only two exceptions, don't include dill. In other words, they're disagreeing with Rabbi Eliezer. They hold dill, the green stuff, does not need to be tithed. It's dill seeds, not dill weed. That's the primary pre under normal circumstances, with two exceptions. These two exceptions, shichalayim, which seems to be, I don't know, whatever it is, some kind of green leafy thing, and the gargir, which seems like it's arugula. So our school, I think, translates it as a rocket, the shechalayim, and the gargir, I don't know if that's arugula, whatever it is, these two like greens, you automatically will intend to eat the greens also because they're that yummy, and that being the case, both the greens and the seeds are automatically subject to the requirement of tithes regardless of your stam kavana, you know, when you planted them. Every other kind of plant, you're intending for the seeds, and the leaves are exempt from tithing unless you dafka have the leaves in mind also when you plant them. Maseches Maaseros, Perek Dalet, Mishnah Vav, 4-6. In the previous Mishnah, we'd established the basic principle that it's the ikar pri, meaning the actual intended output, primary output of a plant, which is subject to the Maaseros requirements. And for example, we said in the previous Mishnah that when you plant a coriander plant and you cultivate it, so it's the coriander seeds which are the primary output that you desire under normal circumstances, and only those seeds are subject to Maaseros requirements, whereas the leaves, called cilantro, are exempt unless you intentionally planted the coriander plant for the leaves as well, in which case the leaves would also, as cilantro, be required to be tithed. And importantly, and here's the nub, if you intended to plant it for the cilantro, meaning the leaves of the plant, that doesn't mean that the coriander seeds are not subject to tithing requirements. They are, because the normal reason why people cultivate coriander plants is for the seeds. So the seeds is the standard objective produce that the plant produces. When I say standard and objective, I mean based in that time and that place. So nowadays it could be different, and based on what's normal for that society and that location to the reasons why one cultivates whatever plant they're cultivating. So here in Mishnah Vav, we continue that same thought. I'm talking about other kinds of plants, and we start out by talking about the Rabban Shimon Gamliel Omer, Tamaros shel tilton, v'shel chardal, v'shel pul halavan, the tamarot, which I'll define in a second, it's part of the plant, of tilton. Tilton is fenugreek, again, like chilba, it's called by Temani Jews. It's a certain seed that is used to flavor things. Chardal is mustard, again, the mustard seed being the normal intended output, and the pul halavan, which is a kind of white bean. Sometimes I've seen it translated as the hyacinth bean. I'm unfamiliar with the hyacinth bean or what the pul halavan even is. But in any case, all three of those plants, it's the seed or bean that's the primary output. But the tamarot are also chayavat b'maisras. According to Rabban Shimon Gamliel, it's also normal to eat the tamarot of these plants. And therefore, if you do, you have to tithe it first if you eat it in a achilas keva sort of way. So what are tamarot? So the bartender gives two separate pshatim. The first one, he says, it's lulavim. Now, lulav, he gives, for example, like they have in grapevine. So that's like a tendril, like the little fresh shoots that grow off the vine. So according to that pshat, we're talking about the fresh shoots growing off the vine or the plant of the fenugreek, the mustard, and the pul halavan, the white bean plant. The second pshat that he gives is when the pod starts to grow, where the seed will or the bean will be growing inside of it. Like think of, like, for example, if you're familiar with, say, like sugar snap peas, for example. So when that, even as a plant, the pea plant, so when the pea pod starts to grow before there are any peas inside the pea pod, there's like a little sort of like thing growing, the nascent pod, and that's the tamar. And you could eat it, the pod, even before the peas, if you will, grow inside of it. So the same thing, if you have a pul halavan or a fenugreek and so on, so a little pod that grows at the beginning before the little seeds inside of it come to be there, that's the tamarot. And that's also subject to tithing requirements, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Okay. The Mishnah continues in saying, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Hatzlaf, when it comes to the tzlaf is the caper bush. You've seen them before because when you go to the Kotel, it's those green plants growing out the wall. Those are caper bushes. Now, caper bushes produce two separate types of edible foods. One are called capers, and one are called caper berries. Nowadays, no one eats caper berries if you live in the Western world, but people do eat capers. Capers are the bud before the flower grows on the caper bush. There's a little, like a small flower bud, if you will. It's still green and tight. That's a caper, and people like to eat that in their, on their, you know, smoked salmon and stuff like that. So the caper is the bud, and like all plants, the plants grows a bud, which turns into a flower. The flower gets fertilized, and then out of the flower, the leaves will fall off of the flower, and out of like the heart of the flower, the ovaries of the flower, will come a fruiting body. And that fruiting body will have seeds inside, and the seeds will spread some way or other, and a new plant will grow, new flowers, new fruiting body, etc. So the caper is what you, like the bud, which you cut off of the caper bush before it even turns into a flower. And that's a very common food. If, however, you leave the caper to grow, it becomes a flower, and out of the flower grows this little, almost looks like a mini cucumber. It's about the size of a date. This is a little confusing, because the word tamar can mean date, but here it doesn't mean that at all. So just in the previous part of the mission, we said tamarot of fenugreek, mustard, and white beans. The tamar literally could be understood to be the date, but of course not a date. In any case, just making this a little confusing, the little green fruiting body that comes out of the caper bush is called the caper berry. Looks about the size of a date and looks kind of a lot like, actually, like a little mini cucumber or something like that. That's called a caper berry, and it's also edible, full of seeds. I never ate them before, but you can eat them pickled, or people can like cut them up and saute them, etc. In any case, that being the case, you have two separate peros that grow on the tzlaf plant, the caper plant, the capers and the caper berries. Okay, so According to Eliezer, Eliezer Omer, Hatzlaf Misaser Tamaros, Vevionos, Vekafres. There are three different components, says Rabbi Eliezer. One is the tamar, one is the evion, and one is the kafres. And all three of those are normal food parts, edible parts of a caper bush, and they're all subject to tithing equally. What these are, so tamarot, the Bartanur says, is again lulavin shabot, the little like tendrils that grow, so it's some sort of edible tendril. That's the first shot he gives, meaning that would be like the stalk, perhaps, on which the caper berry grows. The other pshat he gives is the perach. The perach is a flower. So that would mean, I would understand it to be referring to the capers. So tamarot are capers. Evionot, and evionot are a little like berries. So that is presumably the primary fruit, meaning the caper berry. Again, about the size of a date. Kind of looks like a cucumber. And then the kafres. Now kafres, Bartanu understands, and this is from the sugyas and shas, etc., that it's talking about the husk, the shomer of the pri, like the husk around the fruit that protects it. Exactly what it is, I'm not perfectly sure, to be honest. Okay? But in any case, caper bush, three outputs, all of which are subject to tithing, says Rabbi Eliezer. And Rabbi Kiva says, no ein misaser eila evionos mepnei shehen pri. He says, only the evionot, meaning only the caper berries, are the ones that are subject to tithing requirements, and capers themselves and the husks around the caper berries are not normally considered to be food, and therefore would not be subject to tithing, again, unless you intentionally cultivate it specifically for capers, in which case, like we saw in the previous Mishnah, those parts of the plant would also be subject to tithing requirements. Halacha follows Rabbi Akiva, and with that we finish the fourth parak.